Blog Talk Radio. We are not alone. And welcome to another episode of Contact Radio, featuring Leslie Mitchell Clark and and a very, very good evening, everyone. This is your host, Leslie Mitchell Clark, and I am joined, as always, by my co-host and a partner in crime here, Mr. Wes Roberts. Good evening, Wes. How are you doing?
Hey, Leslie. I'm doing very well and looking forward to this discussion. It's going to be an amazing show.
We are very excited because in addition to ufology, and which most of our focus is on, as you know, here at Contact Radio, tonight we're going to be talking about a subject matter that is very close to my heart, very close to Wes Roberts' heart as well, and that is the area of paranormal investigation. And we're incredibly fortunate to have as our guest tonight a team led by Ryan Stacey of Blacklight ISS, and the team has been investigating Ontario-based haunts. Maybe they've gone beyond that, I'm not sure, but I believe it's mostly Ontario-based. And we're going to hear all about the process of how these wonderful trio of investigators work together, their criteria, the equipment they use, and some of their more fascinating or maybe even scary experiences.
I like the scary parts.
I do too. I like the scary bits. Always have. Anyway, without further ado, I would also mention, folks, that we are actually airing this broadcast, which has been previously recorded. So tonight we will not be able to take listener calls or run our chat room, but that's a very small price to pay to be able to converse with these excellent guests. So, Ryan Stacey, good evening. How are you? And thank you for joining us.
I'm good. How are you?
Fantastic. And as I mentioned in the intro, I wonder if you could just tell us a little bit about your team, how you came together, and what is motivating you or what has motivated you to adapt your technology and your skills into the realm of paranormal investigations.
Okay, well, I'm a private investigator. I have been for the last 5 years. Went to college for police foundations, took forensics and stuff like that. I've always been interested in the paranormal, more particularly in the ufology. I'm being picked on over here by my colleague here, Ed Burdan, laughing at me. Since then, I've always had an interest in paranormal activity. So what I've done is I'm trying to create a model around statistical facts. So the way I do my investigations with real people, such as investigations for fraud or missing persons or low case, the process is the same. So I'm applying that to the paranormal realm. Through that, I'm hoping to, I'm not able to determine what things are, but I can definitely determine what things aren't. And I can't do that alone. I have with me Priscilla. She is sensitive to paranormal. She's also very good at deductive reasoning. She's very good at investigating. She helps with all that stuff. I also have Ed Burdan here with me. He's our equipment tech guy, and he does negative healing, and he's very familiar with paranormal activity.
So I guess at least with regard to some of your team, or maybe all of you, you have had previous paranormal experiences, and therefore, you know, there's a curiosity or a sensitivity or an openness on the part of all of you to investigating.
Yes. I personally have not seen anything. However, I do understand the possibility, and I am intrigued because there's a lot of things around us, such as radio waves, cell phones, that suggest extraterrestrial beings or interdimensional beings, as I like to call them. Whereas Ed, I'll talk about your experience.
Well, my experience has started at a very young age. I lived in Surrey, BC as a baby, 10 months old, had a near-death experience in the home we lived in. There was crazy haunting in that home, and I believe just based on everything that's happened to me throughout the course of my 43 years, something from that experience has followed me through the last 40 years or so. We had a dog that was pulled in that house, found underneath the couch in that airplane. That raging inferno going in this fireplace, and it was never hot. Coupled with the fact that things get placed on fire and go missing for months and months and months on end. And then just to reappear in the exact same spot. The house was creepy. It was just amazing. What really, really put it together, though, is still to this day, I can remember every detail of the layout of that house from 10 months old to now. And the experiences that I've had from that house on, just fueled and driven this desire to want to find out more, research the paranormal. I bought all kinds of different equipment to try and help find the truth and talk to spirits. And I've been attacked a number of times, twice almost fatally by the paranormal. And I believe it was the same entity both times that I was attacked. Actually hospitalized once because my throat started to close up because I was attacked in bed. So these things, 40-some-odd years, and I've got nothing but the desire to help other people. I started dealing with the native healing. I live on a reserve, so we started getting into the smudging and the different ceremonies, talking to a lot of different medicine men, and just trying to find ways to try and protect people, help people, and maybe even rid them of the plague of bad entities that might be there, harming them and their family and driving them crazy. Because let's face it, people talk about the paranormal to people that don't understand, and they think they're nuts. So I'm trying to find a way to not only prove that it's there, get something on video or recording, but I also want to help the people that are suffering from this affliction, because there's a lot of people out there that lose their house, their family, and everything to do with their life.
I see. And do you feel that residence in Surrey, BC that you mentioned, do you think that it was on some type of geophysical hot spot, which is why it was so active, or did the house itself have some type of history where there may have been some residual activity?
Well, I believe that there was it had to have been some sort of a porthole or something. A dark entity from that, I believe, has been following me for 40 years. After we moved out of that dwelling, my father's cousins moved into the house. Their son also was attacked at 10 months old and died in the same bedroom that I was attacked in. My father's watch, he took it off to wash his hands while we lived there and set it on the counter, and he went to put it back on and it was gone. His cousins found it 6 months later sitting on the same spot. He left it and sent it back to him.
Mm-hmm. Well, certainly, A-porting is within the bag of tricks of most entities that have learned how to manipulate the third density in a kinesthetic way. Now, this dark entity that you're speaking of, do you feel that this dark entity was at one time human, a human being filled with anger or a negative agenda, or do you subscribe to the concept that there are beings that are either either demonic or without any moral, ethical concerns, that they're just messing with us, a little bit like perhaps the Middle Eastern concept of the jinn, just troublemaking entities that are not physical, that are really even like a different phylum from human beings.
Yes, I believe very much in that concept. I'm pretty sure that the entity that's been attached to me for all these years, I don't believe it was ever human. I think it is a demonic presence. It only attacks me, but it's followed me all over Canada, like Alberta, Manitoba, Ontario, everywhere I've lived. I've had experiences with the same entity, and it only goes after me. I believe it's probably spent all this time trying to break me down, trying to get me to the point where I'm vulnerable, so that it may be able to take me over or make me do its bidding. But unfortunately, I've learned how to be strong and resilient, and I've understood so much about it because of all the research I've done that I fend it off at every cause. Like, it'll go away for 2 months at a time, come back and at full force. Like, every time it steps up, it attacks. I've been pushed downstairs, held down to my bed. I've been picked up and thrown out of a shower. Had something go under my throat and crush my throat to the point where I couldn't breathe. These attacks have gone on and off for years and years, and only once in my entire life have I actually seen it. The rest of the times, it just appears to be a dark mass.
Mm-hmm.
So it's been something that I've had to really work hard to try and overcome some of the problems that I've had with it. Luckily, it hasn't attacked anyone else in my family or this
mm-hmm. Well, fortunately, these types of experiences that you're discussing in my readings and research, they're the minority of the types of experiences that people tend to have. Do you feel that you generally are dealing, when you, say for instance, I'm going to backtrack a little bit, when you are assigned or take on an investigation of a home or location with documented paranormal activity, do you generally find this activity to be resulting from entities that have not crossed over? Is that the bulk of what you think is going on?
Yes, I do believe that that's really the bulk of it. A lot of people misunderstand the paranormal. They believe that they're being haunted when it's actually, in fact, residual energies from in or around that property. They don't necessarily go after the people that are living there or try and disrupt anybody. They're just there because that's part of the energy that's stayed with that.
Yes. Well, certainly you've all heard of the stone tape theory, where there are certain materials, and of course in Canada here we have nothing but the Canadian Shield, which is a perfect receptor, if you will, like a battery, like a filament. So residual activity is, I'm in total agreement with you that residual activity is most of the time what is going on. And that can be also, kicked up a notch if there is the presence of adolescence. And then you've got the kinesthetic energy, and then you've got your poltergeist experiences, which again, I believe are primarily residual energy that is being manipulated on the subconscious level. I don't know if you're familiar with the work of Dr. Barry Taff, but he's one of the foremost, I would have to say, paranormal investigators, and his belief is that a huge high percentage of what we see in the area of phenomena is in fact free-floating energy that is being manipulated by, really, or enhanced by living physical beings.
Yeah, I've actually read a lot of this stuff, and there's a lot of different studies done about telekinesis and how the moods of the people in the dwelling tend to fuel some of the activity. There's a lot of angry energy. If you're fighting with your spouse or having problems with your family, energy that just keeps manifesting and getting worse and stepping up, like things getting thrown, things getting moved, things mm-hmm. getting pushed. And like it's just an energy that grows and grows and grows from the past things that have happened in that home.
And pre-adolescent and adolescent youth are, you know, often hugely responsible. I remember my younger sister and I, when we were tweens, we used to just sort of play a game and make cardboard boxes fly around in the closet. Don't ask me how we did it.
and that's exactly it. The younger folks tend to have more going on. They're not really, they don't rein in their thoughts, and their emotions are more free. So they tend to be able to portray that, and it just manifests whatever the energy is that's left there residually. And even if there isn't any residual energy, if there's enough turmoil going on with the hormonal changes and the misfiring in the brain, the chemical changes, it does tend to come across as a paranormal event, like a poltergeist haunting. A lot of people have been very spooked by this sort of thing.
I'm going to butt in here. You actually see the difference between Ed and I. He's more on one side and I'm more on the investigative side here. So I buy into what he's saying. I do believe it's definitely possible. Me, on my investigative side of things, I've always believed that what we're seeing is a result of interdimensional beings. So there may not be something that has passed on, but it could be something that we can't see trying to communicate with us. And what we're seeing as these black masses or this energy is the result of them trying to communicate with us like we are trying to communicate with them. And when I connect interdimensional beings, I associate that with MUFON, alien investigations and stuff like that. So what we're essentially trying to do is find a bridge between paranormal activity and ufology, because they could be very well be the same. So although we don't believe the cause of this activity is the same, we do accept the fact that it does exist. There is something causing it. And with Priscilla right in the middle, she swings both ways, to, for lack of a better term.
Don't worry, I won't hurt anyone.
It really brings us together, because I'm hard focused on the facts and what we can prove, you know, and Ed's so hard on his beliefs, and he believes it, and I don't have any information to discredit him or prove that he's wrong. So, you know, I have no choice but to accept his beliefs, and he so far hasn't been able to prove to me that it does exist, and I haven't been able to prove to him that it doesn't exist. So we're left with possibilities, but or one and the same. That makes any sense.
Well, indeed, the idea of an entity being formed out of energy to do bidding, if you will, is certainly nothing new. The Native peoples, the Native American peoples, and Native Canadian peoples were able to create energy beings that they then placated and worshipped and such. And also, even in the ancient Vedic scripts, they talk about the creation of tulpas, which again are thought forms that take a group to create, and those thought forms are comprised of energy and then become sort of what's the word I'm looking for? Independent and uncontrollable, if you will.
No, and that's exactly it. So things can manifest out of so many different sources, but at some point they develop enough energy to be able to manipulate things on their own. They develop their own conscience,
mm-hmm.
and that's when they start to really wreak havoc on a house full of people that are not. You know, the fear fuels it. The anger, the frustration, it all fuels it. And once it gets out of hand and gets to the point where it's uncontrollable, that's when you lead to the problem where you have to start getting it eradicated from it.
So getting back to something you were saying a little bit ago, a few of us, Leslie and myself included, and others, are now beginning to consider what you mentioned, which I would call a unified, let's call it a unified field or unified energy theory, where especially extraterrestrials or ultra-terrestrials are easily able to cross in and out of realms. And also ghosts can do the same thing, or discarnate spirits can do the same thing. The source or origin of these diverse spirits is beginning to all sort of coalesce into a single theory that they're working with energy much as we can, and we're overcomplicating the picture. Is that something you would agree with?
Yeah, we could be disrupting it. We could, you know, like negative and positive ends of a battery. You know, if we're both trying to communicate with each other using the same force and meanings, or the other one has advanced technology that we don't possess, we could be interfering with something. Or maybe on the other end, they're just as concerned as we are. Because there's nothing greater than paranoia. Like, I mean, you ask so many questions, you just want answers.
Yeah. Now, I will say that something kind of interesting that I have noticed in doing both paranormal work, in the sense that you guys are doing it, and also working with individuals through hypnotherapy and their relationships with what we would call extraterrestrial beings. In my experience, when a discarnate entity is attempting to manifest, and again, let's just say for the sake of argument that this is an intelligent haunt. This is a being who hasn't crossed over, who has an agenda or an issue or maybe just an attachment. So when a discarnate entity is beginning to manifest, you may notice that a big drop in the temperature. And the theory behind this is that the entity is using whatever energy they can to manifest, and the most accessible energy is caloric energy, heat. And so they're sucking all the heat out of the environment to convert that to energy. Now, what I've noticed is when there's an attempted manifestation or a partial manifestation by an extraterrestrial, which has happened in my treatment space, you can believe me or not, but I have experienced this. The difference is that the environment becomes incredibly warm, which seems almost as if they are adding energy of their own into the environment in order to accomplish the manifestation. So we have discarded humanoids sucking heat out of the environment, and we have perhaps sophisticated extraterrestrial interdimensional beings who are used to operating in the higher vibrations, and they seem to be adding kinesthetic energy.
That could be a difference between like negative and positive. So just like there's good and bad people, there could be a malevolent, or malicious species as well. So maybe, in theory, that the warmth is more of a positive, and the extraction is more of a negative.
It could be, or it could just be this is the equipment that they have to work with. I myself am not a big subscriber, and I certainly do not mean to disavow or disrespect or not accept what we've been talking about, because I do believe that there are entities that may not have ever been physical who are negatively agended. I do believe that. I've had enough experience to have touched on that. I believe that happens. But I also really think that most of what we see is morally neutral.
Yeah.
Priscilla, let's talk to you, my dear. I want to hear about your feelings about what the paranormal investigations are like for you and your particular point of view from a sensitive. Let's hear about your experiences.
Okay. Well, like Ryan said, I'm kind of stuck in the middle of these two. Ryan being a bit of a skeptic and Ed being a true believer. It's like a rose between two thorns. I believe that there is something there, but I do want to find some proof. And I do want to share that proof with other people.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm a little bit of a clueless when it comes to the investigations, only because I do know that there is something out there that exists. And with the experiences that have happened with Ed, you know, I know that it is possible that they can harm you. But, I mean, I'm getting used to it, and yeah, I just really have a lot of fun with it.
Mm-hmm. And do you feel, as a female person, that you are sometimes more the object of attention than the male persons?
I think Ed takes a lot of the attention. He does a lot of the communicating, a lot of the talking. So that's fine with me. But I do feel the energy. Like you were saying, it gets really cold. I get goosebumps, and talking about the energy transfer, I can actually feel when they manifest, they take energy from me,
mm-hmm.
not just, you know, the heat and things like that. But you know, I can start to feel weak. And
yes, and you can allow them to do that too. I mean, it's not unusual in an investigation to actually tell an entity who's trying to manifest. You know, if you feel it's safe, if you're not getting a frightening or disturbing or negative vibe from the being, you can say, I think, utilize my energy to manifest so we can see you. It's okay. And then, of course, you become incredibly cold because all of your body heat is being taken.
What kind of equipment
do you guys use, generally speaking, when you're conducting an investigation? I know that the scientific, the right brain part of this is very important because people are skeptics, they're naysayers, and certainly the client that hires you probably really appreciates any of the, you know, the solid data or evidence that you can collect.
It really depends on situation. If there is, let me use a REM pod for sightings or stories of movement throughout halls or stuff being touched or moved, you know, so we kind of want to catch.
Mm-hmm.
And within that room, we'll use, I use black light.
Mm-hmm.
For fluorescence, because with the extraterrestrial theory of them leaving behind UV light and stuff like that to manifest energy, sometimes we can see some resonance.
Mm-hmm.
And then we use, what else do we use?
Digital recorders. We've got a lot of different infrared lights for our cameras, so we can try and capture things that the eye doesn't see, hear sounds that we wouldn't hear it at a different volume level. And once you play it back, you'll pick up talking that none of us heard. Like the REM pod is basically just an energy field. You set it in a room.
Yeah.
There's a spirit around, breaks the energy field, it alarms, it goes lights up and stuff. It just gives you another medium to be able to see that there's something moving that isn't you. The digital recorders pick up the EVPs, then we use the EMF detectors to check the energy in the room, see if there are spikes of the EMF, temperature displacement with the temperature gauges on the EMF recorder as well. That way we can try and track the energy and track the cold spots and any number of different ways that we can try and make something happen on video so that we can record it and show it to I mean, we're trying to look for proof. It's not just about us feeling like I can walk into a place and tell you whether I feel it's a haunting or not. Just by the energy in the house or the building, I can tell you that there's something there or isn't. But I can't prove it to you without showing it to you on video or on an audio recording.
The first thing we usually do, too, before we use equipment is we'll establish a baseline as well. Because every house, every dwelling has a different... normal when compared to electromagnetic energy and, you know, winds and drafts, make sure the windows are closed, shut off the Wi-Fi, and then do a sweep to determine what the normal baseline range is. So that way when we do our investigations, we can see where the spikes are so that we know right off the bat what is normal, then it's easier for us to determine what's abnormal.
Mm-hmm. Exactly, exactly. And do you ever experiment or utilize what we call ghost boxes or various other devices? I forget the name of the device that has a preloaded vocabulary, and through changes in various vibrations or whatever, the entity can select from the vocabulary and actually communicate sometimes in full sentences. Do you use either of those devices, the ghost box or the, I'm afraid I can't remember the name of the second device I discussed?
Yes, no, I have an SB7 spirit box with an external speaker and everything. We tried to use that. We haven't used the Ovulus 3 or anything like that.
Oh, the Ovulus, yes.
Yeah, and I know that there's another device coming out recently that's apparently all these different tools together. It hasn't been proven yet. They still haven't even started shipping them yet. So I'm kind of waiting to see what the vibe is on that, whether anything's getting good results. The Ovulus 3 would be a great tool, but we don't know how much of that's actual spirit just trying to communicate with you, or just a computer-generated program just trying to make noise. So
it's also really hard to distinguish anything, too, because it's loud. So if we're recording with our digital recorders, we want to pick up these high frequencies and low frequencies. As soon as we turn on the spirit box, everything is canceled out because it's so loud. I find that it's very interfering. But, like I said, like ACE is in place, so if there's been a report of communication in a specific room, you know, we line all the ducks in a row here, we'll go in, we'll see, okay, there's an EMF, like, we have, you know, electromagnetic activity, there's a temperature drop in here. There's been stories of communication happening in this room, let's try and talk with the digital recorder, see what we pick up, and if we get nothing, then let's try the squawk box, what I call it. But, you know, I haven't seen it work personally yet. I'm not really ready to say let's not use it, but I personally prefer not to use it.
So I'm just wondering here, a couple of questions, I guess, directed at or to Ed. One is, why you? And the other is, have you been investigated?
Yes, I have actually investigated a number of different places for people I know. And why me? I'm not sure. I think it's just I seem to attract spirits. Like the house I live in right now, coupled with the spirit that's been attached to me for so many years, there's two other spirits in our house. And they've actually tried to communicate with me. Of course, they won't let me videotape anything. They tamper with my equipment. Every time I have it on, they'll shut it off. And I mean, we take the equipment in all kinds of different places, but for some reason, in my house, they won't allow it to be videoed. You can watch it move the cameras. You can watch it do the focus in and out, but it shuts the camera off and starts it again and shuts it off and plays with the equipment. So I haven't been able to capture anything to show Ryan that this stuff actually works in you know...
It's hard for me to accept it just because, like, I haven't witnessed anything personally with Ed. We haven't investigated Ed, really, like, other than giving him the opportunity to show me that his beliefs will help us discover stuff. So by me trying really hard to prove it doesn't exist and him trying really hard to prove it exists, one of us is going to come out, you know, on top at some point, or we'll be meeting in the middle.
Well, what about physical evidence? If Ed is throwing down a staircase, he's going to be bruised like hell.
Well, yeah, for sure, but these are situations that happened prior to us meeting.
I see.
So I haven't been around long enough to see anything like that happen.
Okay.
Do I not believe him? I do believe him.
I was just going to say, so during your investigations in present time, with the three of you together, have any of you had any kind of physical manifestations on your bodies? Say sometimes, you know, scratches or being, you know, being poked or touched or something of that nature, which is not necessarily a negative thing. I think sometimes it's the entity just doing whatever they can to get attention because they have a message and they have an agenda. So have any of you experienced a documented physical manifestation?
Well, me personally, and I think Ed as well, when we investigated the SS Keewatin, we both came out with a strange rash.
Yes.
Right? And we didn't really have an idea of where that came from. And we felt like the whole time we were there, it was kind of latched on to us.
Mm-hmm.
We had an experience there with the REM pod. Kept going off, and then afterwards we felt like it almost followed us home. We were having some strange things happen, lights turning on and off.
The odd thing about this, so that for those of you who don't know, the SS Keewatin, they have ghost tours, and when we went to do security there, Priscilla and Ed went on to have a tour. So they went and had this tour, the ghost tour through the Keewatin, and then I went to look for maintenance for safety and stuff. So I also do security on the side. So I was nowhere near where these two were. And these two were the only two on the tour, and both of them happened to have these lesions or these rashes. So I don't know if that's a coincidence or because they went on the tour and I didn't. With everything else, too, like the REM pod going off, it shouldn't have gone off because I've done everything to test it. We showed it. You know, there was absolutely no walkie-talkies. There was no Wi-Fi in the area unless something had passed off. Now, if you're familiar with the REM pod, if something was in the air, it would bleep for a second. But this thing was going off for, what, approximately
5 minutes.
Two to 3 minutes, I would say. It was going off long enough to drain the battery. So with the rod on the REM pod, in order for that to happen, us to manipulate that, we have to physically grab the rod and hold on to it. With a brand new battery, what happened? I don't know. So that would be probably
batteries draining, any kind of power source being drained is something I'm sure that any investigative unit goes through frequently when they're in the paranormal milieu, because again, I think that we're having attempts at manifestation, and the entity or entities is sucking energy from anywhere that they can, including batteries. So I know you probably had a number of experiences where inexplicably your batteries or your charged devices are sapped.
There was a coincidence, you just remind me of it too. When we were on the Keewatin, that's another thing. I try to keep everybody together so we can rule out the fact that somebody's off somewhere else making a noise to contaminate. So we were all together. I was recording the video, and we went through this one passageway in the upper deck. Battery had died. So we're like, okay, let's go swap out the batteries. And then we ended up going through. It lasted maybe another hour or so, but we went through the same passageway, had the same goosebumps, the same feeling, and the battery died in the exact same spot. I was manning the camera. So, I mean, I can honestly say that I didn't hit the battery power off. There was no warning. It was full battery power, but something had drained the battery. Now, we tested the battery because I thought originally it was a poor battery. We just needed to get a new one. Ed lent me the camera for a weekend with both batteries, and I was able to determine that both batteries are working fine. So, what happened? Again, I do not know.
Well, through the course of this doing security at the Keewatin, we had some of our equipment set up on the table. Throughout the course of that 3 weekends, we went through 40 batteries. 40 batteries.
Wow, wow.
And video cameras that normally hold a charge for 2-3 hours were actually being drained in 20 minutes flat.
Yeah.
We had to plug the cameras into the wall just to make sure that they didn't drain.
Right. That is so classic, actually. And I was wondering, now, obviously you're very interested, you have different points of view within your trio. You are interested not only in the emotional or the spiritual perception of entities, but also the hard physical evidence within the range that we can you know, document it. Do you ever work with psychics? And by using the term psychic, I mean somebody who sees, hears, perceives spirit in a very physical, open, and regular way. Do you ever work with these individuals, or do you feel that that's just not scientific enough for the type of investigation that you want to do?
It's touchy. So we haven't really came across someone claiming to be psychic because we haven't really needed one. However, if it came down to the point that someone was willing to participate in the investigation, I am willing to give it a try. But my rules, I've always explained to the team that if we're going to bring somebody in who claims to be a medium, claims to be psychic, I want to put them through some sort of a test to prove that this is not financial gain, to prove that this isn't like a game. Because like, it could be possible, but I truly believe that there are some people out there that are doing it for attention, and you're playing with people's emotions. So, I mean, it's very easy for me as an investigator to walk into a room and look around the room, and I'll be able to tell you things about your life just by the things that are in the room. So if I'm able to do that not being a medium, you know, it's very possible for them to do that. And what I don't want is for them to say, I'm speaking to your past loved one and getting the emotions all up and everyone's happy. And, this, you know, I mean, on the good side, it could be a positive thing for someone who needs closure, but I don't want somebody coming in and playing with somebody's emotions. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and there are people that do cold readings in the mm-hmm. sense of they're very perceptive. They use trickery. They use leading questions. There are people, and some of them are on TV, who I, as a mental health care professional and also a neuro-linguistic programmer, which is pretty tricky stuff, I know that they're hustling. I can feel it. I can smell it. I can see it. That being said, there are some wonderful people that are, you know, documented psychic mediums who usually are not interested in any kind of limelight, who, if brought into an investigation, can be a direct communication conduit. One of the people that I know that does this so brilliantly is a lovely woman named Carrie Chilcott, and she is located. She was on was it Canada's Most Haunted?
No.
But she's one of the leaders of the Burlington group, and I believe she also has some Native Canadian, Native American ancestry. So she uses a lot of protection and goes in there like Xena, warrior princess. But she's the real deal. So there are people, I believe, I've seen them in action, who are the real deal. But as you say, Ryan, there are also people who are just very good at looking at clues and looking at human behavior, et cetera, et cetera.
I can't honestly disclude the possibility of using them because I have no way of knowing because I'm not psychic myself. So it's unfair for me to say, no, you can't be part of the investigation because I don't believe in it, but I will say that I'm willing to try it once. Mm-hmm. Either it works or it doesn't, because, you know, I don't want to waste our time, I don't want to waste anybody else's time, but again, I mean, there's lots of people out there who claim that it works, so one bad apple might ruin it for the rest. But.
Indeed. And certainly it's hard to convert emotional exchanges into empirical evidence, which is what your clients are probably looking for. Which brings me to the point.
It's not credible in court either, right? Like, that's the thing. That's the investigative mind too. When we do these investigations, I'm thinking, I want something that you can show somebody. Imagine you're on trial and something happened, and you need to prove without a doubt that a ghost had done this. What evidence do you need to prove that? And that's what I'm trying to collect.
Mm-hmm. How do your clients come to you? How do they find you? And what would determine a case that you would be interested in as opposed to something that you just don't want to touch with a 10-foot pole?
Well, there's two ways that they can approach. We have our outlets. You can find us on Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, all that stuff. So if they do contact us that way, we do have a Kijiji ad out. You know, some people will mention it and all that stuff. And I also am partnered with MUFON right now. I do get cases from MUFON that I investigate, and if I see any signs of paranormal involvement, I do bridge Uncharted with them. Mm-hmm. So, a bunch of different ways, and really it's just I take the information that give me, and then I eliminate as much as possible, and if I'm left with too many unknowns, then, you know, I give them a phone call, talk about it, record conversation, you know, listen to the tells. Sometimes if I can get video evidence, we had a recent investigation with you, Leslie, there with the client there, the video recorded of him explaining his story, and look, he's got very minimal visual cues to show any signs of deception. So whether I believe his story or not, you know, things like that kind of way out, you know, should be looking into this further.
Mm-hmm. Priscilla, when you and your cohorts there are about to do an investigation and you know that it's coming up, you know, on the weekend or what have you, do you ever have precognitive dreams about what you're going to find or who might be there?
Nothing out of the ordinary. I do, on many instances, have sleep paralysis where I have things that kind of go bump in the night, wake me up, although I feel I'm awake. But other than that, that's just the norm for me. So I can't really say that I can feel it before it's coming. Ed, though, he's probably more so sensitive to stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
That's actually, I a lot of times I have visions or dreams of things that are coming, and it's scary because 9 out of 10 times it's pretty accurate. Like when you meet a person and You're trying to gauge what that person's about. I mean, gut instinct will tell you a lot about a person. Usually you can nail it pretty darn close. So you know what to stay away from and what you want to get into.
And that's a good thing.
That's a good thing.
Do you journalize these experiences, Ed? Do you journalize them? Because this is a form of proof.
Sorry, you were cutting out there.
The question was, are these, say, precognitive experiences journalized, diarized, because that would form some proof?
Actually, no, I haven't really. I've done some recording of some of my thoughts and some of the things I've seen. I do talk about those things a lot, so I guess there is some sort of a record of things that I've felt, and like I haven't really got into writing everything down. But I'm doing a blog now where we're trying to build things and get people talking and render questions to try and get the buzz going. I want to try and get other people involved to see if other people have the same thoughts and feelings and opinions that we do. I figure collectively with all the paranormal people out there and all the enthusiasts, maybe we can use that to try and be a tool to come to some better understanding of what's actually going on.
Mm-hmm. Right, okay.
Indeed. What was one of the most, I would have to say, terrifying or frightening or scary experiences that you three have had in the course of your paranormal investigations? Something that really stands out.
We, at the Q1, again, me holding the camera, we got to the point where we were going to do the spirit box session. We're going to try that out because there was claims that people were talking in a certain corridor. I set the camera up because I wanted to keep an eye on all of us in the group. it wouldn't tilt because I was focusing on making sure the camera didn't move and everyone was staying in frame. So I shook the table a little bit to make sure it wasn't going to fall, wasn't going to loose. Like it was snug. There was no way it was going to move. And then I don't know what Ed had said, but as soon as he started, out of nowhere, the camera had fallen to the ground. And I'm going to guess that it was probably 7 inches from either side of this table. And there was no lean. The ship wasn't swaying. Like, I mean, we didn't feel anything. Like, I mean, there was absolutely no reason other than me not setting the camera up properly and it falling because of gravity. But even if it had fallen because of gravity, the camera angle would have changed and wouldn't have fallen on the floor. So in order for it to fall on the floor, it had to move a significant distance.
It was like picked up and moved onto the floor.
Like it's almost as if something had picked it up. Now in order to do that, energy, like, I mean, there's evidence out there that sound waves and electromagnetic energy, or enough of it in the right areas, can lift and levitate objects and move them. But then you have to accept, it's first to accept the idea that there was electromagnetic energy in the room, and then you have to accept the idea that it's intelligent enough to move an object to a specific spot on cue. So being a skeptic, I have no explanation for that. But I do know that it is physically impossible based on the parameters that were set in place for that to happen. And that is enough to keep me wondering.
Mm-hmm. Have you caught any really profound or specific EVPs where it convinced you that you were dealing with an intelligent haunt or an entity that identified itself or an agenda?
EVPs are really hard for me. Personally, just because it could be interpreted differently by different people. It depends on what you want to hear versus what you think you heard. There's been a couple weird noises in unexplained areas. I think on the Keewatin and there was a couple, so we had a static cam set up in this room where there was a sighting of someone in a wedding dress or something. I can't remember exactly. Mm-hmm. But we had visual on the digital recorder, and we were off somewhere else on the other end of the ship, so when we went back to review the footage, there was weird clicking noises. And there was nothing in the ship or in that room, per se, that would imitate those noises, and we don't know what that means. Mm-hmm. It wasn't in a pattern. It was random. It was loud. It was at different distances away from the camera. So there's no pattern to...
Indeed, and EVPs, and they can really show up any place. In my other life, in the music industry, which I don't generally talk about, but there have been occasions where EVPs of intelligent nature have appeared on tape just in a recording studio without anybody soliciting, anything. They can just sort of happen spontaneously, I think, when you least expect it.
You actually just triggered a memory of mine. I used to be in a band back in the day, too, and I've done a live recording. I don't think I've told you guys this before, too. And we listened back to the audio track, and we heard this weird saying. I think it was, go get 'em or something like that. And there are some of that in the lyrics, so I was singing, and I was like, I don't remember saying that. And then we zoned out the audio track, and it actually clearly says go. Well, I thought it was go get them, and it was weird because there was only two of us in the room. I was the only one at the microphone, and I don't remember saying that. But that was many, many years ago. I didn't think anything of it until you mentioned that.
Yeah, it happens. I owned a recording studio for a while in Los Angeles, and I would say about every 6 months, something anomalous would appear on tape. Now, this was in the, believe it or not, back in the pre-digital era when dinosaurs roamed the earth. Mm-hmm. I mean, we didn't really have computers, and we barely had synthesizers. So it was really tape that we were dealing with, and big, fat recording tape, which is no longer used, certainly. So
in cases, that would be the best evidence. because now with the digital age, you know, there's a lot of skepticism around editing and copying. It's so easy for people to make adjustments that actually having it on tape is probably the best thing for you.
Indeed, and we had no compressors, we had no auto tune, we had no way to mess about with the actual recording in the way that we do now. So I completely concur with what you're saying, that real tape may be the best representative of the EVP phenomena. But that being said, it also seems that discarnate entities have a much easier time manipulating digital technology. So, you know, I'm not sure which way we're going with it, but now, believe it or not, I can hardly believe it, we're almost down to the to the end of our show, and it has been so fascinating to speak with all three of you and the wonderful work that you're doing. And I wonder if you could just let our listening audience know the best way to reach you, and if you're operating really just in Ontario, or if you will go to Quebec or here or there.
Well, you can start with our website, www.blacklightiss.com. You can look at all the features we have there, security investigating, and there's an Uncharted section. So Uncharted, you can find us on Twitter at BlacklightUCD, which stands for the Uncharted Division, which is what this is. You can also find us on YouTube through the website, and Facebook.
Okay.
So that's www.facebook.com/blacklightiss. And just send us a message, let us know what's going on, and I'll contact you, or one of us will contact you as soon as possible, get as much information that we can. We do have a series of questionnaires that we go through just to get as much information as possible, and then we get to work right away. And right now, we're covering Ontario. If it's big enough for us to go anywhere else, for sure. But we need you to convince us that there's something seriously going on that you need us to help you with, and we'd be more than willing to help.
Yeah, wonderful. And I would assume that you also, to a certain extent, would prioritize cases that come your way. For instance, if you find that there are children involved, or there are children that are being harassed or bothered or woken up or scared, would that be a priority case for you?
That would be a priority case for me, especially on the skeptic side, because, you know, there's a lot of, first thing I think of too is, like, you know, I got to rule out, is there child abuse? I got to rule out, is there mental abuse? Is there, you know, mental illnesses and stuff like that? It's like, I mean, it very well might not be paranormal activity causing these things. You know, it's not just about finding answers. It's also about helping and healing and cleansing. Because one thing I can agree on is, no matter what the source of it, something is causing people to feel negative, feel bad, feel like, I mean, it's affecting people emotionally. And
yes, and even even EMF emanations in the right dose can literally cause paranoia. They can EMF emanations, if they're high enough and if people are sensitive enough, they can cause skin rashes, and even, they say, even possibly hallucinations and delusions. So you have to weigh all of the factors, and you have to really check the physical environment to see what's going on.
And if it's as simple as showing up and bringing an EMF meter and showing that there's a hole in their microwave and it's causing EMF to go, you know, 40 feet into the house, they get a new microwave, the stuff stops. It may not be paranormal, but at least they're healthy. You know what I mean?
Yes, that's right.
We're almost like house inspectors, too, in a sense.
Well, folks, we have about 2 minutes here. And again, Wes, did you want to say a couple words here?
Just that it was a very interesting call for me. I was with the Parapsychological Research Institute way back when for about 9 years. We did tons of interesting experiments, so this was great for me to hear this, and we want to help you guys promote your services.
Absolutely, and I would personally love to be involved at some point in an investigation if you feel you needed an extra crew member, if only to balance the female energy, for God's sake.
Well, we got you on speed dial, for sure.
Okay, man. Well, folks, thank you so much for joining us. We've been listening to Blacklight Paranormal, Blacklight ISS, Ryan Stacey and his wonderful crew, and we thank you for tuning into Contact. We will be back with you next week with another live program. Thank you so much.